Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Charity Digital podcast. Today is an extra special podcast as we're making this one specifically for our latest Charity Digital event. That means if you're listening to this, you are officially part of day two of our very own Digital Transformation Week, a week of on-demand and live content with each day shining the spotlight on a particular area of digital transformation that we as charities should all be paying attention to. Today, day two is all about digital challenges. We hear a lot of positive case studies around digital transformation and digital projects. And we would like to keep a positive mindset here at Charity Digital. What we're forgetting is that most projects are built on the challenges we had to overcome to make progress. Obstacles and barriers can appear from anywhere, and there isn't really a forum where people can openly discuss and share those learnings with each other. So we thought, what a good idea for a pod. And we've pulled together a lovely little panel to help get the conversation started. Joining us today, we have Dave Harris, Head of Products and Charities at Torchbox, Janine Woodward-Grant, Deputy Chief Executive Officer at Carers Centre Bath and North East Somerset, and Saoirse Dallas, Custodian at the Alistair Gray Archive. And thanks for agreeing to be part of this podcast and, of course, Digital Transformation Week. How are we all doing today, all right?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
Not too bad.
Real, thanks for joining us again. Before we dive into the fun stuff, it would be great to hear a little bit more about yourselves and your organisations. Now, I'll come to you first, Janine, because I can't wholeheartedly take any credit for this podcast whatsoever, because it was actually an idea that you brought up to me when we met a couple of weeks back. So since you are our muse, I shall start with you first.
I'm not sure I should have had the conversation with you now, given that you were in. So I'm Janine. I work at the Carer Centre. We're an organisation that supports unpaid carers within our local patch of Bath and North East Somerset. And so we provide a number of services to unpaid carers to support them with the challenges of the role of unpaid caring, and also to kind of support their well-being and to connect them into their kind of local communities to get additional support. And something that we're working on, which is part of our digital transformation, is how we can engage more with the local communities that surround carers in order to really embed the support within those communities and enable those communities to understand the support that unpaid carers need and how they as a community can deliver that. So that's kind of that was kind of a key part of our digital transformation journey, which began about 2 years ago.
And we'll get on to that very, very soon. Saoirse, I'll come to you next. Tell us a little bit about the Alistair Gray Archive.
Sure. Hello, I'm Saoirse Dallas, and I'm the custodian of the Alistair Gray Archive, which was established after Alistair died in late 2019 with support from his family. He was considered, I guess, one of Scotland's most important cultural polymaths, and he's left a wealth of visual, literary, historical, cultural material that we can learn from. But also it's really the principles by which he lived his life that we're, as an organisation, carrying on in his name too, and that's of kind of collaboration, sharing of openness and equity as well. So the organisation was really born in the midst of the global pandemic. So obviously the shift moved into sharing digitally. What we've been working on has been really important. But obviously now we're able to actually start to do more physical and in-person events too. So I guess the challenges of moving from predominantly being digital into more this hybrid way of working is some of the things that we're tackling at the moment.
Yeah, talk about baptism by fire. But yeah, looking forward to hearing a lot more about that as we get into it. And last, but certainly not least, Dave, tell us a little bit more about Torchbox.
Oh, thanks, Chris. So hi, everyone. I'm Dave. I'm the head of product for the charity sector at an agency called Torchbox. We've been around for over 20 years, and the focus of our organisation is on doing digital for good. And so that means lots of work in the kind of charity sector and the public sector. From building and marketing digital products and services to wider transformation programs with organizations like Samaritans and Sue Ryder and RNIB. And you know, there are lots of, yeah, as you say, Chris, you know, lots of great examples of things that have worked well, and also lots of kind of challenges across the sector. So yeah, really pleased to be here talking about the kind of things that we've seen through our work.
Yeah, really interested to get your perspective on a lot of this as well. Slightly different viewpoint looking at many different charities. So it's a privilege to have you all here, and thank you once again for joining us. So let's get into it then. You know, I want to sort of start by having a look at the sort of projects and digital transformation issues that you're looking at and going through yourselves. And, you know, addressing, as we're all here to do, some of the challenges that are happening within them. So, Janine, tell us a little bit about your digital transformation and what you've been learning as you've went through that.
Yeah, so I could talk about this for double the length of the podcast on my own. So I'm going to try and keep this really short and focus on the key points. So essentially, our project is, we're really fortunate that we're funded by the National Lottery Digital Fund through our transformation journey, which has been great. And we wanted to tackle the challenge, as I said, of how do we engage the communities around carers in order to embed the support that they have more clearly within their local community. And so that was great. The first challenge was that we realized we knew nothing. And that was really humbling. Like, we had lots of solutions and ideas, but kind of when we sat down with some consultants that were provided by the National Lottery, we realized that all of our solutions were based on assumption. And I think it's just such a massive challenge to realize that you don't know what you think you know. And actually, you're basing a lot on gut instinct, which is not necessarily wrong, but like isn't really data informed. So it's quite a humbling process of realizing we had to do a lot of research, but also quite like that was also actually really a positive once we'd recognized that and accepted that actually just being okay with not knowing everything and having a plan as to how you're going to find that out or how you're going to test things rather than just assuming that you know the right answer was like a really big kind of challenge we wrestled with as a culture, but hopefully we're slightly coming out the other side where we're comfortable with not being the experts on everything. So that was one thing. And then once we'd done a load of research, we realized that the two key tools that we needed were a new website and a new CRM system to help us manage data and manage relationships more effectively. So key challenges there are they are massive tools to replace, big legacy systems to kind of get rid of, and like particularly with like the CRM, we know it's not that good and we know that there's stuff that it doesn't do, but because it's a legacy system and we've created workarounds, there's a lot of pain to get rid of those workarounds just because we know that that's the way that we work. So that's a really interesting challenge. And just realizing how much a CRM does, realizing that it's actually an events management package and it's a CRM. Oh, and by the way, it's also a case management system. Like once you start to get into what you're actually replacing, the project just can balloon. And we've had to be really... That's a real challenge, is how do you manage people's expectations around what you're going to be able to really deliver, which is never going to be the moon on a stick, let's be honest. So that was a big challenge. The website, we now have a brand new website, which I'm really proud of. It was very much the bare minimum we wanted from a new site. It's an MVP, minimum viable product we want to grow. But there's lots, I'm sure people could look at it and go, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, which is probably true. There's lots we need to change. But it was great to be able to work in that way, to go, what's the minimum and how can we build so we could release something really quickly rather than waiting kind of like a year to make it perfect and kind of like get it out there. So that was kind of a positive and a challenge as to how do we explain to staff and bring staff on the journey of this is not the final product. This is the start of the final product. And also there was a real challenge in the website around, I'm really proud of it, but it took a lot to get the content there, which is actually a blog that I've just written, because it was, I think we had to get a lot of culture change into the organization around the fact that content isn't just something that a comms team does. Content is something which everyone is involved in. And the people who are part of the support team or the wellbeing team or the young carers team, they needed to be providing the comms team with the building blocks of that content so the comms team can kind of turn it into something which kind of looks and sounds good on the website, but the comms team can't work from nothing. They can't magic information out of thin air. And there was a bit of a challenge in the organization as to getting to the point where we had enough content and the right content. I could genuinely talk for hours more about this. I'm not even sure that's been very eloquent.
I think you've summarized it quite well. There's a lot there. I mean, you know, the digital content stuff kind of reminded me of you know, it's all about having digital throughout your organization, not having digital teams, right? And that is a challenge in itself. You know, you mentioned the buy-in, you mentioned the culture changes, and having to do with this all at a point where you're also making mistakes and learning from what you're doing. I think you said there, you know, we didn't do this perfectly. I don't think anybody does. And I think it's one of those things, a bit like parenthood, you know, and I've got a baby on the way, so I'm being focused on this as well. But like, you don't know how to do it until you do it, and then you kind of learn as you go. And I think there's a certain amount of acceptance you need for that as well.
Absolutely,
which is just it's fascinating. I think this idea of, you know, digital transformation requires a lot of bravery and the ability to fail forward and understand the journey you've been on to get to the journey where you want to be, and adding in buy-in and culture on top of that makes you think a lot more of why don't we address these stuff a lot more instead of focusing on all the positives, because it's a slog. Soja, I'm going to come to you next. Anything to add to that? Share about your own challenges and your own digital transformation journey.
Yeah, I mean, as I sort of said earlier, I guess the organization was born in the midst of the global pandemic. So, and it is really, you know, it's a very small organization. It's essentially me. I'm supported by volunteers and student placement. So everything has sort of had to be transformed. But it being established in this very uncertain period, obviously the digital side of things has been imperative and something to kind of harness and foster the community and get people aware of what the organization is before they could obviously physically come and visit it or participate in more physical events. So I guess it's been constantly shaped through delivery and through that process. So I feel, and as you've both mentioned, yeah, definitely feeling it's been a massive upskilling for me in terms of working with that. But I have had a go. I've learned a lot along the way. I've not been frightened to ask for help when I've needed it. And I've also just looked around at other organizations and what they've done and thought, oh, that could work for me, or this maybe is better for, you know, further down the line. But I guess what, you know, some of the sort of bigger events that we've done. So I've been working with Alistair's publisher, Canongate, and also an events organization called Nauriki. And we've established this annual day, a bit like Bloomsday with Dreams Joyce, but it's called Grey Day. And it's we did the first one in the global pandemic. It was all digital and online. And it was great in terms of the participation and the engagement and range of people from Glasgow, but beyond that, who could actually actively get involved in that event. That if we just started it by doing an in-person event, it would have been obviously quite different. So the challenge this year was about delivering a physical event, but also being able to still keep that participatory element moving forward. And I guess that's maybe the challenge I'm finding now moving forward, is how do you still deliver a really good high quality event in person, but also caters for the sort of digital audience too, because they are two different things. And also, as we've all been kind of talking about, it's the capacity and it's the resourcing around all of that. You know, I've had to obviously fundraise, establish the organization within the backdrop of all of this. So what I've really tried to do is get the website going, use social media. That's been a big upskilling for me. I was tweeting a little bit myself before this, but now I'm like, you know, I'm having a go at Instagram and doing posting stories and making videos and doing all these things that I never thought I would have done, but I'm trying. And somehow I'm reflecting on what's worked and what hasn't, what is getting good feedback, and streamlining and being able to really now this year content plan a bit more in line with some of the physical things that we're delivering too. So yeah, it's been a huge challenge, but like we're doing here today, it's about sort of sharing, isn't it, and shaping, and it's an ongoing journey as well. So I think that's a thing that I've been reminded of.
Absolutely. I think that's, and you know, good on you first of all, but I think that's a reason point that you raise about hybrid events as well, because I think there's a certain thought process around hybrid events, like you just split the work in half. Mm-hmm. When actually you're essentially running two different events.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem, to just streamline something isn't, you know, you need to, how do you still offer a good quality virtual experience. You know, the one in the room is different. So how do you cater for that with limited resources, limited time, all these things? It is. I think that's the new sort of challenge moving forward.
It is. Hybrid raises a lot of questions. I think there's a lot of value to it. Yeah. But in terms of how we operate versus how we fundraise, how we market, how we run events, I think they're two very separate things. But yeah, no, as you said, these things are ongoing and will continue to go. So the whole point of today is to start these conversations and then get them continued as we progress through. And Dave, I'm really interested to hear from you on this. Obviously, you work with a number of different charities. It'd be great to hear some of the challenges you're seeing in the sector and what Torchbox are doing around them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'd say for me, you know, digital transformation, it's not just kind of adding this new kind of shiny digital layer on top of things. I would love to go back to the point that Janine made. You know, I want to really actually emphasize the importance of that content point. So we come in, we work with organizations, we maybe, you know, create some new tech platforms, new user interfaces. You know, those will only go a certain way towards creating an effective, optimized experience for someone who's interacting with your organization. You know, so much of their experience is going to be down to the words that they read or that they hear if they're using a screen reader to access your services. And you know, if that content isn't right, their experience is going to fail. They might not complete the task they've come to do. They might not, you know, get that information they need. And I think I've seen, you know, in the past, you know, many occasions where, you know, an organization gets some great new tech, but the content doesn't get the same attention as the rest of the system there. And, you know, it's all, you know, as Janine was saying about establishing those workflows for creating things with input from the subject matter experts, from the content design experts, you know, people who kind of understand how to make something truly user-centered. You do a lot of user testing on prototypes and designs, but that's not always followed through in, you know, regular ongoing user testing of content and of those platforms. And you know, if you're introducing this tech to, you know, solve people's problems or help them with things, you know, the key thing there is, you know, it's talking to those people, it's observing them, it's seeing how they experience these things. And I think I'd say, you know, there are a lot more organizations who are getting that now, I think. And obviously, you know, through things like this, obviously there's lots of sharing in the sector, which is great. And, you know, definitely some good practice to follow from the public sector, from the government digital service, and people who really, you know, who work in the open and tell about how they're doing these kind of things. So yeah, I think it was really great to kind of to hear, Janine, that was a key part of what you've been doing with your transformation.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Nice to know we might have got something right.
It sounds as though there's like an overarching sort of underpinning, almost sort of line running through all this, which is people.
Absolutely.
And you can't really do any sort of digital transformation. We talk culture, we talk everything else, but anything is reliant on people, you know, whether it's user testing, whether it's getting buy-in from teams and boards and et cetera. Like, people are, you know, a lot like your digital culture. People are the crux of a solid digital, people are the sort of the crux of a solid digital transformation, which you can never sort of undermine the importance of that, I don't think. And trying to do it without them will almost be, you know, a challenge right from the get-go. But it was great to hear a little bit about your own personal challenges. If you could look back and change something, what would it be? Sasha, I'm going to come to you first on that.
I don't know if I'd change anything, because I think it's the process is part of it, isn't it? Learning and not getting it right. So, and I think for me, like, you know, we've sort of both mentioned this sort of earlier. It's like the idea of I'm mindful now moving forward. How do I start to share some of those processes? So it's not always a bit about the end point and seeing a sort of finished result. It's how do you share what did happen, what did you learn from it, what you might have done differently? Because I think that's really important. I mean, I'm reflecting obviously Alistair and how he worked as an artist and a practitioner, and the method and the methodology and his approach was as important, almost more important sometimes than the outcomes. And I think that's an interesting thing to think about moving forward, because each conversation you have, each person who comes in or you connect with physically or digitally, helps shape that conversation and enhance it. And I think that's what I think moving forward, that's so I don't know if I obviously look back and have reflected, but I'm using it as a catalyst to change or open things moving forward. So
love that. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely, you should take those learnings forward. Janine, how about you?
Yeah, like, I love what Saoirse just said. Actually, I think that's such a brilliant point. Like this, and I think there's so much about, like, you're never ever going to get it right first time. Like, so don't try. Don't try and get it right first time. Just try. Mm-hmm. Just do it. And you're right about needing to be brave in digital transformation, because it's difficult to not get something wrong. It's difficult to have to learn from something, because mm-hmm. you want to just be a success. You want to just mm-hmm. be able to say you've done this amazing thing. And I think with digital transformation, you have to accept that's unlikely to happen, but it is brilliant in and of itself to be able to learn. And I think the one thing I would say to myself looking back, the one different thing I probably would do with a because I work in a slightly larger team than Saoirse has, is just focus on the culture. It is so vital, not just people understanding why you're changing, but really bringing them on that journey, really thinking about what is the ecosystem that you're working in, what is the culture change that you need to deliver, and what are the soft things you need to do. Mm-hmm. So not the training courses you need to send people on, but what are the things you need to do to create the space for that culture change? How can you create the safety for people to change the way they work and not always get it right? How can you create the safety for them to feel it's okay to ask questions when they don't know what the answer is? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't just happen, as much as we might want it to. You have to spend time and effort on that, which kind of feels like you're not spending time on digital transformation, but you are. And I think we haven't, as an organization, I hold my hands up, we haven't focused enough on that, because we get derailed by issues with the tech or issues with resource or kind of all of those other things. And the one thing which always falls then is the time I'm spending on culture change.
Yeah.
Because it's the one thing that can sort of be, well, can't be dropped, but kind of can be dropped. And I just wish I didn't do that. I wish I could just find the space to not let that be the thing that I drop.
I think that's a really valid point. Dave, anything to add?
Well, I was going to say to that, Janine, your point there just made me think this. I think there's a real issue here with terminology and how we talk about things. And when we call it a digital transformation, it sets this expectation of, so we're going to be doing this digital stuff. And it's actually, it's kind of organizational transformation. And as you say, it's introducing those spaces for people to feel open and confident in talking about failure and how what they're learning and framing that failure in a positive way that's going to take you on this kind of journey that, you know, eventually, you know, you might have this ambitious vision of a future where you're, you know, everything's enabled by modern technology and you're providing amazing user experiences and you've got this platform for ongoing innovation, but yeah, there are so many steps to take that will facilitate that. But I think it's crucial to not just think this is a digital thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's much bigger than that, isn't it? No, loved that. Loved all those answers. Thank you very much. Not much more needed to be said on those. But I do want to shift focus a little bit and look at the sector as a whole. And thank you for sharing your sort of individual stories and journeys and some of the challenges you face. But looking at the sector in a broader sense, what type of challenges are you seeing, Dave, out there at the minute, working with lots of these different organisations and different charities? We've obviously mentioned a few here, hybrid work and buy-in and such. Are there anything else that can be added to that list as well that other charities are experiencing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there are many. And I think, you know, when we start working with new clients, new organisations, sometimes people can think, oh, we've got this problem. It's like, you know, this is not unique to you at all. And I think, you know, this maybe goes back to some of the points that Janine, you mentioned in your intro. I think Legacy technology is an issue that is often holding people back, and you know, maybe you're locked into a certain provider, or it's like this critical part of your operational ecosystem is this thing that someone commissioned 5 years ago and no one really knows about what we can do with it. You might have a kind of a complex ecosystem of, you know, different applications in the background with, you know, data in different places that aren't talking to each other. And as you said, the, you know, hardworking teams will have invented their ways of working around those problems. So although it's kind of, it's an ineffective setup, you know, there it is kind of working, but if you don't kind of transform that part, then on the front end, you know, you're going to struggle. So I'd say on that, you know, yeah, if you're looking to kind of transform how you deliver those services and experiences, you know, there's no point thinking about let's innovate, let's have some artificial intelligence and chatbots. You know, if you don't have that really good back end for the data and the content, you know, you don't have the foundations in place. So I'd say those are some of the key ones. Those and the cultural stuff that we talked about. I think again, it's in a lot of organizations you have leaders who just really get it. You know, they know, you know, this is how we need to operate in what, you know, we're now in the third decade of the 21st century. You know, this is just how a modern organization needs to work, how to facilitate these ways of working, ways of developing new services, ways of iterating on how we do things. But you know, there are some where, you know, for some reason they might not, and it might be in kind of knowledge gaps or a lack of willingness to try kind of riskier ways of working in inverted commas there, which having organizations having a bit of a fear of, you know, maybe they've seen other organizations who have done a big technology project and it's gone wrong for some reason. They're like, you know, yeah, I don't want that to happen to me. And so there's a lot of thinking around, you know, how do you mitigate those kind of things? And how do you kind of create that kind of culture, both from, I guess, from the grassroots level of people identifying problems and thinking of ways around them, but also, you know, top down from a kind of enlightened leadership.
Mm. It's interesting you mentioned leadership, actually. Do you think there's more that can be done at sort of a leadership trustee level?
I think, as I said, yeah, in some organizations, probably yes. And I think, you know, there are some great kind of resources and things out there that will help organizations. You know, if someone listening to this podcast feels like, you know, this sounds like me, then I would definitely point you at some of the some great resources on the NCVO website as well around like how to kind of get your leadership, get your trustees behind this kind of thing. But yeah, some organizations may have, you know, recruited specific digital trustees, or they may have people who are a bit more kind of savvy in these kind of areas. But I think, as I've said, it's not just kind of, I'm kind of keen that we don't, not to kind of silo things into, you know, having your digital trustee. It's about broadening the digital knowledge around, you know, people who are responsible for HR, for operations and all those other things that will have an impact on how you're able to do these kind of things.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's top down, bottom up, isn't it? Where, you know, the leadership are pushing digital initiatives, but bottom up are asking questions, and it's creating that safe space to ask questions. Because if people are sitting around waiting for answers, you know, it just prolongs the process, doesn't it? Janine, Sorsha, anything to add to that?
I think probably the one thing I would say is something is kind of to go back to a point that Dave made earlier about, like, I kind of wish we didn't call it digital transformation. I wish the word digital didn't exist. I think there's work that could be done to help people in leadership positions recognize that it's organizational transformation that we're talking about. And digital just happens to be part of that, or a key part of the delivery of that transformation. And I think the more that people understand that, and the more that people understand that transformation is about putting your users at the center and listening to your users and responding to your users' needs, the more they can then buy into it. Because it's not just about the risk of spending money on a shiny website that might not work. The flip side of that is the risk of not listening to your users and giving them what they need, making you an organization which is going to become redundant because you're not providing what your users need. But I think because we use the word digital, it can really throw people off, especially if they don't have experience. And that's really sad. If we could get rid of that word, it would be brilliant.
It's interesting that you say that, because we used to shy away from the term digital transformation for such a long time, both internally and externally. We like to think of it as just being more digital, just finding a way within your organization to be more digital. And our conference is called the Be More Digital Conference. Yet we've come back to it here because we realize it's a much bigger thing to help the sector come to terms with that. That digital transformation is very much a word that's not going to go away anytime soon. Yeah. But within it, and when you drill it down, really, it's all about just how can you add digital in little waves, sort of here, there, and everywhere. So it's really interesting to hear you both mention that, which is great. Saoirse, sorry, if I stepped in front of you there, anything you'd like to add?
I obviously totally agree with everything that's been said before. I guess from my experience being a very small organisation and, tackling all the being born in the midst of all of these sort of challenges, I think it is, like you're saying, just starting with a little bit and reflecting and using, like now as things open up and widen, there's obviously more participation and users that I'm coming in and they're helping sort of shape and produce some of that content, which I'm kind of interested in exploring too, around sort of community curation around some of that content and material and how you widen and use that in different ways. So that's things that I've been thinking about, but I think it can be overwhelming, can't it, at every level. And often it's just about starting and doing something, reflecting, seeing what's been learned and being shaped by input and other experiences, really.
Absolutely. So we've talked a lot about the different sort of types of challenges that the sector are facing at the minute, as well as highlighting a couple of areas that might be sort of holding us back. Why do you think we struggle to talk about challenges as a sector? Why do you think the charity sector as a whole really doesn't feel comfortable with addressing some of the fears and challenges that we all have to face? Janine, I'm going to ask you that one first.
Put me in the spotlight. I'm going to make an assumption here because I don't know, but I think that it's probably around a mindset issue that I think that in the charity sector, we're expected to be experts in our field. And we're expected to, and we kind of are almost forced to put on the facade of like being the best, because we have to fight for funding and we have to prove our worth. And I think to take that facade away and be like, actually, we're trying to do the best we can do, but sometimes we get it wrong. And this is what happened when we got it wrong. And this is how we tried to rectify that. I think there is I get worried. I released a blog once where it was called like, what happens when it goes wrong? And I explained about a situation in the carer center where we'd had this meeting. We'd been doing all this kind of user focused work. And we had this meeting and I was like, we're not getting it. This is not right. And like everyone in the meeting was like, yeah, this is something's gone wrong here. And we all went away and I just sat there so dejected. But then some really brilliant stuff came out of that meeting and about kind of like just the learning of kind of how we dealt with that meeting when it went wrong and kind of the things we put in place to mean that that didn't happen again were just so vital. I turned it into a blog and a lot of the staff who were involved in that were like, this is really raw, Janine. This is really like, this is really vulnerable to put this out there that we did it wrong. But I was like, let's do it anyway. And it got some really good feedback from the kind of the honesty. But it was a challenge for us to put that out there, to be that honest. So I would imagine that it's the same for other organizations. It's hard.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I know, Dave, you've got some really interesting thoughts on this as well. So I'm going to come to you next.
Yeah, I think to pick up on Janine's point there, I think, that kind of mindset and how I guess it's around reputation management, right? If how do you take a test and learn and prototyping approach and trying new things and maybe kind of failing and learning from them, if you're going to then kind of have to try and justify that to some external criticism or justify it to funders. And I think you're thinking about how you pitch and propose those is really important. And so if you think about, these are the outcomes that we're looking to achieve. To reach that outcome, this is the way that we're going to work. This is how we're going to involve the users, to make sure that we are kind of solving real problems. This is how we're going to test them. I think it's around framing this idea of failure in a way that kind of shows that failure is taking you on a journey towards something, you know, kind of a bigger end goal than that kind of short-term failure. And yeah, it's definitely a tricky thing to do. And and there are definitely moves to do this. And I know, you know, Janine doing these kind of public blogs about your work, great. You know, working in the open, I think, is such a great way to be honest about what you're doing. It's something that definitely in the public sector, it's been done for a number of years now. You see in kind of local and central government departments talking about the work that they're doing. But now I think increasingly in the sector, you do see quite forward-thinking charities working in this kind of way as well, and sharing what they're learning. And from the blog post about your transformation to, you know, content design teams talking about their content process, or there are charities who even have their roadmap for the work, the discovery work they're doing, what they're delivering and what they've learned, you know, publicly published on their own website, you know. So I think there are, what, you know, that's quite a big step to take, but I think there are maybe ways to do that. And, you know, beginning by, you know, working more in the open internally within your organization, and then maybe taking the step to start talking more with your supporters about what you're doing before becoming like totally, you know, open to the public about what you're doing.
Yeah, there's a definite need to sort of destigmatize it a little bit, isn't there? And
absolutely,
to open those conversations, even amongst peer networks, you know, where we're all trying, as a sector, we're all trying to achieve a common goal at the end of the day, which is make the world a better place through one way, shape or another. And we should never be put off by competition in that sense. I think it's a sector where you would benefit massively from co-opetition and using each other and leaning on each other a little bit more to learn and take those learnings forward and have these honest conversations with each other. So hopefully this and a lot of other things that are going on are a great sort of platform for that. And we start to see a lot more of that going forward. Social conscious, we haven't heard from you on this, but is anything you want to add?
No, I mean, I just fully agree with what has been said before by Janine and Dave, but that idea of working in the open and exposing, you know, I think it's having an outcome, but it being flexible and being shaped by the process. And I think sharing that process is really important. And as a very small organisation, I'm mindful of doing that myself now moving forward and how important that is. And it's scary too, isn't it? But I think it's, like you say, it opens up conversations because it allows others to then share too and feel okay about being honest about the learning process within it too.
100%. And absolutely. Well, I think that's about all we've got time for today. So I just want to say a massive thank you to all of you for joining us today. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I think there's some sort of groundworks there for some great work to go on and happen, I think, and some doors, conversations to open that. I hope people start to walk through and start to have those conversations. So thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.
Thank you, Chris.
No problem. And thank you, all of you, for listening today. I hope you enjoy the rest of Digital Transformation Week. Don't forget to check out the rest of the days that we've got coming up and engage with the content that we've got there ready for you, as you want, when you want it. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.